Please continue to eat. Don't feel. The topic I want to discuss with you this evening is particularly apropos since it's a day after Yom Ha'atzma'ut. And then the question is, does a secular state have religious significance? Now, clearly, the whole question of how to view, from the perspective of Jewish history, perspective of Judaism, the emergence of the state of Israel, has many incorporates many different issues. I want to focus just on this one. Let's take the founders of the state and the leaders of the government on the terms that they have. They see themselves as secular, and the state as a secular Jewish state. And the question then becomes, assuming that does the state have any religious significance? We would imagine something that have religious significance should be led by religious people, should reflect something religious. So in order to deal with this, I'm going to discuss a particular perspective which is based to a great degree on the writings of Rav Soloveitchik of the Rav, though I will incorporate some other perspectives as well. The assumption of the question is that the word religious has a very clear meaning to us, right? Judaism is a religion, Christianity is a religion, Islam is a religion. And I want to start by discussing whether that is necessarily the proper term and the proper perspective to view Judaism and our relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. So I'm going to begin with the classic case of conversion in Jewish history, and that is Rus, and the discussion that took place between Rus and her mother-in-law Naomi after Rus and Orpah, who were married to the two sons of Naomi, and their husbands pass away, and Naomi wants to return from Moab to Israel, and they offer to go with her. And they have this dialogue. And at one point, Orpah says, okay, I'll go back to Moab. And Ruth remains connected to Naomi. So in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Tes Zayin, after Naomi says to her, listen, your sister-in-law went back. Go back like her. You're not part of the Jewish people. Why do you have to come with me? What do I have to offer you? I'm an elderly woman going back with nothing. So Rus replies, Vatomer Rus, Al tifki'i vi l'azvech l'shuv mi'acharayach. Ki el asher telchi eilech uv'asher talini olin amech ami v'lokayach elokoy. And we'll focus on the last four words of Ruth's response. Amech ami velokayach elokai. Your nation is my nation, your people is my people, and your God is my God. And of course the order is interesting. It starts with Amech ami before saying elokayach elokai. And it appears that in order for Ruth to convert, she has to not only accept Judaism, the God of the Jews, but to accept being part of the Jewish people. And it's not just a phrase that Ruth uses. It's an integral part of the Geirus process. If you look up in the Shulchan Aruch, the Hilchas Geirim, the laws of conversion, we'll find that the prospective Geir is told, why should you want to join the Jewish people? The Jewish people have been persecuted around the world. There's so much anti-Semitism. And let's step back for a second. The person wants to become Jewish. They want to accept Taryag mitzvahs. They want to be part of a religion. Why is there any focus? Why are they asked? Why are they discouraged on the basis that the Jewish people are persecuted? And the answer is that joining the Jewish people is part and parcel of the Geirus. It's not merely an acceptance of Taryag mitzvah, so of course it is acceptance of mitzvahs, but it also means I want to be part of the Jewish people. The Poresh Medarkei Tzibur, formation of the Rambam, of those who have lose their share in the world to come, even if they keep Torah and mitzvahs. The person says, listen, I'm going to hide my Jewish identity, but I'm going to keep all the mitzvahs. I don't want to suffer when there's too many anti-Semites. Jews have a tough time. I'll do all the religion. I'll keep all the halachas, but you know, people don't have to know I'm Jewish. If you don't share in the suffering as well as the joy of the Jewish people, then you can't be part of it. So it's Judaism is not only a religion in the standard terms. That's the first thing. What we use in secular language as differentiation between nationalism and religion is not a correct split in our concept of Judaism. Number one. Then let's turn, we'll go to the Rambam. This is not my observation, it's that of the Rav. The Rambam begins Hilchas Chanukah, the laws of Chanukah, by giving a history lesson. V'bayis sheni k'shemolchu yavon, and during the Second Commonwealth, when the Greeks ruled, gazru gzeros al Yisrael, they made decrees against Israel, ubatlu datam, and they tried to destroy the religious observance, lo hinicho osam lasot b'torah b'mitzvos. They didn't allow the Jews to study Torah and to be involved in mitzvos. Upashtu yadam b'memonam v'mnoseihem. And they stole the Jewish money, and they violated the Jewish women, their daughters. V'nechnasu laheichal apartso apratzos v'timu tahataros. They went into Beis HaMikdash, and they destroyed things, they made things impure. And they made life extremely difficult for the Jews. And they oppressed the Jews terribly. Ad until God saved us, and the Chashmonaim won out against them, they killed the Greeks, and they saved the Jews from the hand of Shiu Yisrael Miyadam, Vehemidu Melach Min HaKohanim, Vechazra Malchus Yisrael Yesra Al Masayim Shana Arachur Ben Hasheni. And through the victory of the Chashmonaim, sovereignty was returned to the Jewish people. We had Jewish rule over Israel over 200 years until the Churban Bayis HaShani. And then the Rambam in the next halacha talks about the Nes of the Pach HaShemen and about Chanukah. And the obvious question is, the Rambam is not a history book. The Rambam is a book of law, of halacha. Why do we need the history lesson? You just start and talk about, right? Victory, the miracle of the Pach Hashem, and we made Chanukah. So one could answer that in contrast to all the other Jewish holidays, the story of Chanukah is not included in Tanakh. Obviously, Yetzias Mitzrayim is in the Chumash, Sefer Shmos. Even Purim is in Megillas Esther. Chanukah took place way after the period of time that the Tanakh was closed. Sefer HaMakabim is not included in our Tanakh, not Megillas Antiochus, Megillas Chanukah, none of this is included. So therefore the Rambam had to say something about it because it's not in our sources. But it seems to be more than that. Why does he mention things that are not religious in nature? They stole our money, they filed our daughters. Why did the Rambam have to say that when the Hashmonaim won, they resurrected Jewish kingdom and sovereignty of Israel for over 200 years. So one sees that part of the celebration of Chanukah is not only the religious moment, the miracle, but the very fact that the Jews regained control over our own land and were not subject to the Greeks or the Greek Syrians is part of the story of Chanukah. It's not separated. That our having control over our own land in itself has religious significance to the Rambam. Let's go then to the Ramban, the next source. Now, for those of you who study in Israel, I don't think it's possible to study in any of the yeshivot in Israel and not see this particular Ramban. But I just want to make some observation again based, this is taken from an article where the Rav made this very observation. In the Rambam wrote a Sefer HaMitzvot. The Rambam wrote a work in which he enumerates the 613 mitzvot. The Ramban wrote a critical commentary on the Rambam in which he disagreed with the Rambam about the count of some of the mitzvahs. However, once you accept the count of 613, if the Ramban says certain mitzvahs the Rambam counted shouldn't be counted, then the Ramban has to add other mitzvahs to get back the number 613. If you drop some, you got to add others. So the fourth of the mitzvahs asay that the Ramban adds is the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of settling in the land of Israel, which the Rambam doesn't count. But what I'm interested in is the specific formulation of the Ramban. Mitzvah Revius Shinstaveinu, the fourth of the additional mitzvahs that I'm adding, the Rambam didn't count. Asher Nosan Akel Yisbarach V'Yisal L'Avoseinu, La'avram Yitzchak LeYaakov, is to inherit, settle the land that was given to our forefathers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And two conditions, V'lo na'azvo b'yadzu la'aseinu mino umos, and not give it over to the control of another nation, not ourselves, O lishmama, and not leave it desolate. So included in the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, according to the Ramban, is that the Jews and not another people control the land. One, and number two, that we don't leave it desolate. That we work the soil of the land. Right? That we develop the land. That we grow crops on the land. So in the Ramban's formulation of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah is not merely a mitzvah on individuals to settle in Israel, but it's a mitzvah on the Jewish people that the Jewish people should have its own government, and not leave the land fallow and actually work the land and have a functioning society. So we see already from the Rambam and from the Ramban in different ways that the fact of Jews having sovereignty over the land and not another nation has profound religious significance. And at no point did the Ramban say that it is done by religious Jews. If it contrasts with Jews and another nation, it means Jewish control and not Arab control, Palestinian control, not British control, right? And when the Rambam talked about the Chashmonaim, it's well known that during the 200-year period that the Chashmonaim ruled over Israel, they weren't always the biggest tzaddikim in the world. Without going into further details. But the Rambam doesn't say that the Chashmonaim won and the first Chanashim were tzaddikim, we'll forget about the other ones. No, he says over 200 years till we lost it, the Chashmonaim ruled, and that was a value. That's part of what we're celebrating in Hanukkah, that it was the Greeks ran things, they were terrible, and then the Jews recaptured our land. We had our own government for 200 years. So we've already hopefully established on some level that there is halakhic significance to the Jews having the government in Israel and to defending it against enemies of the Jewish people. And that going back to the story of Naomi and Ruth, that part of being Jewish is being part of a people, not only someone who observes the mitzvot. Now the Rav extends this in Kol Dodi Dofek, and it's a very, very long quote, and I'm not going to go over the entire all the pages. And the Rav talks about two covenants, which he calls in one place Brit Sinai or Brit Mitzrayim. He also talks about Brit Goral and Brit Yehud. The Rambam talks about the fact that when the Jews were taken out of Mitzrayim, all the Jews were persecuted in Mitzrayim. This was prior to Maimed Har Sinai. The Jews weren't given the Torah yet. All the Jews shared in the suffering in Egypt, and all the Jews shared in being saved by being taken out of Egypt and given freedom. So he said there's a covenant amongst the Jewish people, which he calls Brit Mitzrayim, or Brit Goral, of all the Jews who share in Jewish history. We're all part of the same people. We suffer together, we struggle together, we have our happy moments together, and that's a covenant which we all share. Then there's a second level. The second level is the Brit of Sinai. The Brit of Sinai, of course, was when all the Jewish people of that time, and we believe according to the Medrash that all Anishamos, were there and said Nasa Benishma and accepted the Torah. That's the second level. But once you have a notion of a double covenant, one of Jewish peoplehood sharing in Jewish troubles, fighting Jewish battles, sharing experiences, as well as the higher level one of sharing religious commitments, so then you already have that which binds us with all other Jews who have a common commitment to Jewish destiny. Many may not work for those who want to deny their identity, but certainly the Yishuv in Eretz Israel, the leadership of the country, whatever we think about their various policies and attitudes of religious things all see themselves as representing a Jewish state. The motto, Jewish democratic state, I've heard it said endless times. And they see themselves as representing the Jewish people. In fact, the leadership of the state of Israel feels itself responsible on some level for Jews who don't live in Israel as well. Right, so the process of bringing Jews to Israel from all the different countries was not just to have a greater population, which obviously that was part of it, but it was primarily because this is the place for Jews. The law of return, which says that anyone sitting at this table can show up in Israel and say, I want to be a citizen. You're Jewish, you want to be a citizen, that's it. You don't have to, you know, go through the whole immigration process that you have in the United States and to become a citizen. You're Jewish. You want to be in Israel, it's a Jewish place, country for you, you're a citizen. Identity of Jewish life, and it takes responsibility and is concerned about anti-Semitic attacks where they happened in France or whatever country it takes place. There's a sense of responsibility, sense of identification. So even if we don't have that which we aspire to of a religious state, the state by itself represents Jewish peoplehood, sharing the destiny and being part of the Jewish people. So that's the first perspective I want to give. And that's basically this perspective of the Rav Zatzal. And notice that in this perspective, I didn't say anything about Reishit Tzmichat Geulateinu. I didn't talk the beginning of our redemption. I didn't use the word Mashiach. Simply said, Jews having sovereignty over our own land, our historic land, being a sense of responsibility for the Jewish people, that in itself is worthy of celebration. Period. That's it. Would we prefer a religious state? Yes. Though interestingly, the Rav, in one article, I didn't want to give you all this stuff, there was too many pages, says that it wouldn't matter to him if it had a religious government, or in that regard, it doesn't change if he had a religious government. That wouldn't change that on this level. And by the way, and I want to make the point because the Rav made it in a different article, using two Hebrew words, Medina u'memshala. Medina is state, memshala is government. Governments change. I may like a particular government, I may think it's a terrible government. But it's the nature of things. Remember, Israel's a democracy. There'll be another election, there'll be a different government. We don't celebrate that we like a government or we don't like a government. The celebration is of a medina, of a state. That's a permanent thing. Right, right. All right, so it's not this particular government that's relevant. So I don't have to either justify or criticize the present government. That's essentially irrelevant. As the Rav pointed in the same talk, it's that the Kedushat Eretz Yisrael does not increase when we have a good government, to go down when we have a bad government. The government doesn't play any role in determining the Kedusha that's there. Totally unrelated. Yes?
According to the Svar, though, that the fact that it's a sovereign nation, yeah, foreign, then the fact that it's Eretz Yisrael doesn't make a difference.
No. Look, I quoted the interesting point you're making, but it is the land that it was meant to be our land.
But if someone makes a claim that we should have our own sovereign nation, fine.
You want to go to Uganda with Herzl? Go to Uganda, yeah?
Okay, yeah.
All right. Look. Theoretically, you may have a point, though according to the Ramban, certainly not. But the fact of the matter is that the very, with all the talk about it, the nature of Jews being in Galus is that we don't have our own land. In fact, when you think historically, even when we have had certain levels of autonomy, it's always been subject to higher outside authority that could take away the autonomy anytime they wanted. Right? It's only in our own natural environment that we have this.
Right.
Now let me move to the perspective of Rav Kook. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not discussing politics. I'm discussing celebrating the fact that we have our state, period. I wasn't discussing whether we should be angry with the government or favoring the government. From this perspective, it's totally irrelevant. Right? The Rav, at various points, was very critical of the Israeli government. But that had nothing to do with the concept of celebrating the fact we have our own state. Okay? There's another way of looking at it, a very different way of looking at it, even if the conclusions are similar, and that's in the writings of Rav Kook. And Rav Kook's response to the question, can a secular state have religious significance, would have been, since Rav Kook passed away in 1935, 13 years before the state was established, is, what are you talking about? It's not a secular state. Either people think it's a secular state, they may think that. They're performing a religious mission. And Rav Kook expressed this in different ways. I'm going to just quote one of them. I didn't bring it here. The Ritvaz criticized Rav Kook because he was working with the secular settlers of the time, right? The Chalutzim, and they were secular. Not only were many of them non-observant, but the group of them were anti-religious. And he said, "How can you work together with these people who are anti-religious?" So Rav Kook responded in mystical terms, of course, Kabbalistic terms, pointing out that the Kedushat Yisrael, the sanctity of the Jewish people, has two components. One is V'ameh Kulam Kedoshim. I know that was said by Korach. But we all have Kedusha. We're all part of the holy nation. Go back to Har Sinai. And then there's the Kedusha that each one of us earns by what we do, by how we live. Right? That basically was, go back to the Rav for a second, with the Rav's explanation of the mistake of Korach. He said, Korach said to Moshe and Aaron, all the Jews are holy. And the answer is, you're right, but that's one level of Kedusha. Then it's Kedusha you have to earn as well. It can't just be automatic. So Rav Kook quotes the Zohar that over the historical period, as the Jews got further and further away from Sinai, so the intrinsic element gets reduced, and it becomes more and more dependent on what you personally earn. However, it's not going down and to the bottom, but it goes back up again as we get closer to Messianic era. As we get closer to the Messianic era, suddenly the intrinsic Kedusha becomes more and more significant. And if you see the return to Israel as the beginning of the Messianic process, right? It's famous imagery which unfortunately got used to attack us, religious community, the Chamorro Shal Moshiach, which was seen as a put-down, but wasn't meant to be a put-down. What was said is that even the donkey that brought the Moshiach was part of the process. Right? So that those involved in the building up are doing a religious mission, whether they're conscious of it or not. Right? And it reflects this Kedushat Yisrael which is there. Another thing Rav Kook said, it's also related. Rav Kook asked the question, why is it that the Torah wasn't given, this is in our road, why is it that the Torah wasn't given to one of the Avos, or the Imams? Avraham Avinu didn't deserve getting a Torah? Why wasn't it given to Avraham Avinu? Why was it given to the Jewish people on Sinai? And Rav Kook responded that if we really believe that the Torah is the way the world is supposed to live, is supposed to live in accordance with the Torah, then the fact that an individual could live a religious life would prove nothing. A person can be a hermit, go on top of the mountain, and keep anything he wants to keep. But if an entire nation that had to function and interact with other nations can demonstrate the viability of their lives built on Torah, then we show that Torah is a way of life for the world. Because the national existence has to be a full existence. You can't have a whole nation of hermits. The nation has to have an economic policy and a foreign policy, and has to deal with its neighbors and deal with all their segments in society. So the viability of Torah for the world could only be demonstrated on a national level. And that's why the critical thing of having to, this is why however Cook sees the national component being part of the very religious nature of Judaism. Right, showing its viability for the world. The difference between the perspective of the Rav and that of Rav Kook, there's more than one difference. But one difference, of course, is the Rav would say, it is a secular state. But a secular state has value. From our perspective of Judaism, having a secular state doesn't have ultimate value, but it has value in its own right. According to Rav Kook, whether people think that way or not, it's not a secular state. Totally irrelevant what the people think they're doing. In fact, they're rebuilding Eretz Israel. They are bringing us close to Mashiach. They're part of this religious process, whether they're conscious of it or not. So therefore, it's a religious... The answer to the question, can a secular state have religious value, to Rav Kook is, no such thing as a Jewish secular state. It is a religious state. So the question's wrong. Right? Not that you answer the question. There is no such question. On the other hand, of course, Rav Kook's perspective creates also greater frustration when the state or the government doesn't even support religious values. Right? If I see its value not because it's religious, but it's a value in its own right, so I'm disappointed when it doesn't support religious values. But I don't think that it loses its meaning. But if I see it as part of a messianic process, then I'm in trouble when the process doesn't seem to be working, or it seems to be going against it. And then you get into a whole discussion about how this process is supposed to work. Is it a process that just grows and gets better and better every day? Or is it a process that has its ups and downs? Or is that meant to be not a straight line process, but one that oscillates while going in that direction? Which is a discussion that is taking place in the circles who are the followers of Rav Kook and his son, the second Rav Kook, and his Talmidim, because we're already going another generation or two.
So, have patience for whether you're going to push the government to adopt the religion.
That's true. Right, that's a good point. The Rav, in his talks to the famous talks to Mizrahi, which are printed in many different languages, the Rav speaks, I think it's called in English, Chamesh Drashot in Hebrew. In Yiddish, it's Fir Drashot. It's only four in Hebrew and five in... Four in Yiddish, five in Hebrew. They printed an extra one. Right? It's really six in English, but... The sixth one is short, so I don't know if it counts fully. He talks about political accomplishments in the country, but he says that our major thrust should be educational. We should be more concerned with teaching and spreading the religious message than our political accomplishments in the political process. If you had to balance the two. But if the state has great intrinsic religious value, then our political involvement in the state becomes very important religiously. Though we well know political involvement is much more complex and not always satisfactory. Having given you these two perspectives, I just want to make a number of observations that don't require either the two perspectives. Just some observations of the religious significance of having the state of Israel that are practically clear. Right? One is Kibbutz Galiot, the return of Jews from exile to Israel, to our own land. Part of messianic process, but clearly a goal, religious goal. When the state of Israel was founded in 1948, there were 600,000, maybe 650,000 Jews. The number now, depending on how you count all the Russians or whatnot, 5.5-6 million Jews. And it wasn't simply having large families. It was Jews came from all over the world back to Israel, including Jews from locations that no one would have possibly have dreamt possible. Except for one other person in the room besides me, maybe two. The Russian Jewry as the Jews of silence, as the Jews that the Jewish people have gave up on. Some you can't think of anymore. But the communists took over, the Jews disappeared from history in Russia. Who thought about them? No one in 1965 would have believed that there'd be millions of Jews in Israel now. No one in their right mind. Unless someone was a real Navi. And unfortunately, in today's time, Nevuah is not given over to to real prophets. Inconceivable. Did anybody hear that there were Jews in Ethiopia? Let alone. Then we can talk about the Jews in so many other countries that came. Right? So certainly on that level, it's been an extraordinary accomplishment of bringing Jews back from all kinds of places in the world and protected them. Religiously, Talmud Torah. You know, there was a whole discussion, and unfortunately, we now realize, not correctly, many great rabbinic leaders in Europe were afraid and discouraged their Talmidim from traveling to Israel, to then Palestine, a non-religious country. What kind of Torahs are going to be there? The amount of Torah learning taking place in Israel today far surpasses that which took place in Europe. The number of yeshivas in Israel, way beyond that which existed in Europe. And so simply from terms of Torah learning, Israel has been the center of incredible amount of Torah learning. Outside the United States, the Jewish communities all know that their religious survival depends on being nurtured from Israel. Having people, Rabbanim from Israel and Kohelim from Israel, teaching them. Without it, they don't have enough talent, homegrown, to survive Jewishly at all. American Jewry thinks it's independent. I won't get into that debate. I don't happen to agree. You know, think of the fact that the vast majority of young Orthodox American Jews and many non-Orthodox ones have spent serious Torah learning time in Israel. And this goes across the Orthodox community from extreme left-wing Orthodoxy to most Haredi. They go in different times, different ways, they all go. And I can tell you from institutionally here, one of our mixed blessings is that the students identify with the yeshiva in Israel more than they identify with being here. I go to the cafeteria, and you know, and people know I sit down at tables and just sit with people and ask them who they are, where they come from. And invariably, the boys sit at the table together with people they were in Israel with. And that can be 2 years later and 3 years later, and they're different shiurim and different Jewish studies program. They're still sitting with the people they were in Israel. So you know what a powerful experience it's been. Young men, young women. How much Torah from Israel has affected religious life here as well. And we shouldn't lose sight of the impact that it's had, that we owe to it. And that is something I think I'm pretty sure I'm the only one old enough to remember this. And I was a kid, but I do remember. After the Second World War, the Jewish people were very, very discouraged. Even if we didn't fully know the extent of the destruction of the Shoah, and it was a process of finding out a little bit more all the time, the message that got across was one would have to be foolish to be so openly Jewish. It's an anti-Semitic world. Jews are being killed all over the world. The rest of the world didn't fight to protect the Jews. Why do you want to be Jewish? No, you don't have to go back to that period to know in the last 5 years in the United States how many prominent political figures have discovered they're halakhically Jewish. Right? From Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, to George Allen, the former Senator from Virginia, just came up in the election less than a year ago that he discovered his mother was Jewish. How come these people didn't know it earlier? And the answer is their parents made a conscious decision it wasn't worthwhile to be openly Jewish anymore. And they're going to protect their children by saving them from this curse of being Jewish. The emergence of the State of Israel is the critical factor. That and the Six-Day War, which is also Israel, in giving Jews a sense of self-worth and pride. If you look at the history of the day school movement in the United States, before 1948, there were maybe 25, 30 day schools in the entire country. It turned around because the Jew was not embarrassed to send his child to a Jewish school anymore and to be openly Jewish. When I was a kid, we were told not to wear a kippah. You wore a baseball cap. It shouldn't be obvious that you were Jewish. You had to hide it. That was reversed to a great degree simply by the existence of the State of Israel, even for the Jews who are don't come and visit, and don't come and learn. So I gave just a few illustrations of the enormous impact that it's had, the very fact that we have a Jewish state, with all the problems and all the imperfections, with all the anti-Semitism that exists now. It's, if anyone could conceive what Jewish life would have been like today, if Israel hadn't been established in 1948, I don't have to spell it out. The most fundamental religious notion, according to the Chovos HaLevavos, the basis of all of Torah is Hakaras HaTov, is gratitude. If we don't have gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and gratitude to the people who risked their lives and many lost their lives, to create a Jewish state that has had so much impact on Jewish survival, on religious growth, and Torah learning, then there's something lacking in our sense of Hakaras HaTov.